Thanks for listening to this podcast of Trending with Timory. If you haven't already subscribed, please catch us wherever you love to listen to your podcast, from the Relevant Radio app to Apple, YouTube, you name it, we are there. And if you listen on Apple Podcasts, please be sure to go and give us a 5-star review to help other people discover the podcast. Anything you share in terms of episodes, whether it's texting it to a friend, posting on social media, helps to build up the kingdom for God, to help confront the challenging issues we face as a culture, but with joy, with hope, and with an eternal perspective where our faith collides with everyday life, bringing eternal principles to help us live our life joyfully.
So, what's trending? Bridging your Catholic faith with your everyday life. You're listening to Trending with Timory on Relevant Radio.
It's our weekly Gentleman's Hour today on Trending, and I want to dive into an interesting topic having to do with prayer. Gentlemen, I'd like to hear from you. Why don't you pray? Do you like praying? Is praying difficult for you? It's a topic that I've commonly heard, and I had an interesting conversation with my husband I'd like to dive into, but why do men struggle with prayer, and why don't you pray? I've seen faithful Catholics, male and female, who struggle with prayer, but often the routine of prayer seems to be a little more difficult for men. Why is that, and what can be done about it? We're going to dive into this topic. If you'd like to share your thoughts and your experience, gentlemen, give me a call. The number is 1-888-914-9149. I also put a question box up on my Instagram story where you can share your thoughts as well. I've had some fascinating response, and I'm looking forward to sharing that with you a little later. We're going to dive into a recent study coming out that shows 1 out of 5 20-year-olds go to church once or twice a month, but that's it, only 1 in 5. Really interesting stat, lots to say about it. We'll be back to that in just a moment. But again, want to hear your thoughts on prayer. Joining me now is the Executive Vice President of the American Life League, Hugh Brown. And we're going to talk about Planned Parenthood's ice cream truck and their desperate attempt in Texas to reach young people, as we've seen the laws in Texas over the last year, especially last September, really crack down on abortions after 6 weeks, where it would make it illegal for someone and made it so that you and I could sue someone if they tried to obtain or actually access an abortion. This has led to a massive drop in abortion numbers in the state of Texas, and various states across the nation are imitating similar laws and currently have legislation that they're pushing through the legislature to end abortion in their state. We talked about the uniqueness of this law, why it's different from all others, but we're seeing incredible pro-life impact in lives saved of women and children in Texas. But Planned Parenthood is losing their mind when it comes to what to do about this. Hugh Brown, welcome to Trending. Let's talk about how Planned Parenthood is responding in the state of Texas to still try to reach people in the face of pro-life laws that are saving babies' lives and telling a different story about the impact of abortion.
Absolutely. Yeah, thank you for having me. Yeah, Planned Parenthood is clearly an evil organization. They've built, you know, their evil empire, so to speak, on death. And what you referenced with regards to an ice cream truck, they had a musical event, I think, in Austin, Texas, within the last month or 5 weeks. And Planned Parenthood rolled out a truck that was essentially a refurbished ice cream truck. It had, instead of popsicles, it had condoms on sticks painted onto it with various names. It had different sayings about "you scream, I scream, we all scream for abortion." And I think one of the sort of sickening aspects of them, and there's so many things to be frustrated and just disgusted by with Planned Parenthood, but, you know, ice cream trucks are synonymous with driving through a neighborhood and attracting children. Right. So it's not like adults may flock to an ice cream truck. You're dealing with children. So the fact that they would do that, and it, was it in response to what Texas did? No. This truck has existed. Their perversity that's directed at children is nothing new. Their sex education programs, as what they call them, are nothing but perverse, pornographic attempts to corrupt not just young people, but anyone. They are clearly an organization built and structured to funnel and thrive the culture of death. And that ice cream truck is just an example of their unmitigated arrogance and their just perverse, disgusted nature.
Do you know what the response of the young people was to just something that's so blatantly gross? You know, it's interesting as I look at it because a lot of young people today really like things that they consider as very raw, blunt, I guess you could say truthful because of that. And the reality is that Planned Parenthood showing up without sugarcoating things, for lack of better words, in this instance. I mean, they're calling it for what it is, and what they are trying to communicate, what they are trying to push, is very blatant here. Even if it's pretty pink and has sugar coated around it, they're clear about what business they're in. Have you heard what the youth's response was there in Texas to this Planned Parenthood ice cream truck promoting abortion and contraception?
So I think if you ask about what the youth response is, you have to look at how the world measures youth response. And as Catholics, I think we can get caught up in that the youth response typically are things that are trending, whether, you know, whatever social media platform we're talking about, whether it's TikTok or Instagram, whatever it is that's popular at the moment. And, you know, as Catholics, I think one of the challenges we face is that, you know, a lot of our children don't access those things. As families, you know, we try to regulate and mitigate those things. So the interesting response is that the secular world, so to speak, it didn't trend. It wasn't something that blew up. I mean, the only people talking about it and how it got on our radar was either Life News or LifeSite News. And then some of our folks in the field, you know, sent us information about it. And it's just another example of going to great lengths to attract and scandalize children. And they don't think that. I mean, they don't think that for a minute. They, you know, they peddle perversion. They have to peddle perversion because it funds their abortion business. When the condoms
talk
don't
work.
Right.
Talk about the stigma of the creeper in the ice cream truck. I mean, in this instance, it is so
funny.
Blatant. The creeper in the ice cream truck is Planned Parenthood, and it literally is the creeper in the ice cream truck. They are promoting sexual promiscuity as well as what I would say is, I mean, often non-consensual sex. You know, they try to say consent is everything, but they're encouraging pedophilia. They're encouraging sex with minors. And, you know, these are the types of relationships that Planned Parenthood has been okay with, has been caught undercover promoting and encouraging and failing to report on when they are mandated reporters. And so to even see something like this, they are literally the creepers in the ice cream truck. But Hugh, they're so good at going and standing where young people are. I remember even when I was a teenager, you know, they had things such as Teen Talk out there, and you know, they were text messaging and had these websites answering all of these very blunt questions about sexuality that teenagers might have that they otherwise would feel uncomfortable asking their parents. And it was a great resource for teenagers who had questions, who were curious, and Planned Parenthood knew how to reach them, and parents had no idea about these programs and websites.
You're exactly correct. And they spend a lot of time and a lot of resources targeting young people intentionally because that is their business model, right? You mentioned earlier that the laws passed in Texas have greatly mitigated the number of abortions currently being performed in the state of Texas. Isn't that interesting? Because Planned Parenthood, you know, their core business is abortion, even though they deny it. And the way they deny it is that if you were to go to Planned Parenthood and ask for a pregnancy test and to be counseled on whether or not you wanted to have an abortion, they're clearly going to push you 100% to do that. But everything that they do in the exam of you is counted as a service. So there might be, you know, 15 different touches, so to speak, while you're on that visit. They took your blood pressure. They did this. They did that. They count that as 15 services when the truth of the matter is you were there to be counseled for an abortion. So they lie in terms of what percentage of their business is an abortion, and they lie because they're allowed to lie. Everything that you've said, right? They get away with things because it's essentially the death of outrage. You know, that thing is at that truck is at a music event, which you would assume include families, and there's no outrage. Again, you have to go to one of the Christian news sites to find out about it. So I think, you know, that's the importance of what you do, you know, Relevant Radio. As Catholics, as Christians, we have to continue to speak and fight the good fight, because that's the hour we're in. And they'll fight like the example you just gave. I mean, that was the impact on you. What about all the other young women there, right? Mm-hmm. They've normalized abortion. They've normalized death and stigmatized if you oppose it. And it's sad. It's a very sad state, but what we can't give up. We just got to keep fighting the good fight.
Right. It puts parents in a place to have to grapple with very difficult conversations, very adult conversations that are uncomfortable. I was actually just contacted by a parent yesterday. And if you're just joining us, you're listening to Trending with Tim Murray here on Relevant Radio. That's Hugh Brown, the Executive Vice President of American Life League, that you can find them at ALL.org. That's ALL.org. We'll include a link in the podcast notes as well as on my Twitter right now. Follow me at Timmery. That's TimmerIe. Hugh, it's interesting because I had a mom reach out to me yesterday, and she is a faithful, passionate Catholic, just an incredible parent, has a great spouse, good kids. And she was sharing about how her son, who's in a senior in high school, when they've been talking about some of the girls in his class, and he's at a Catholic school, and this, her son kept talking about how this particular girl or a particular couple of girls in his class, he'd refer to them as disgusting. And as, you know, a good Catholic mom, you know, she's encouraging him to have a little bit more charitable of a response with regard to how he's speaking of and viewing this young woman. And as time goes on, his perspective isn't shifting. And he's shared, you know, about how hard the culture is. And she knows the culture is hard, you know, from the impact of pornography and everything else. But she said, Timmery, I went on TikTok and looked up this girl, and I ended up coming on, you know, a senior page of all of the students in his class there at the Catholic school. And she said, what I was looking at was so graphic, so sexually graphic. And these were local kids at our local school. She said, it was the first time where I was putting two and two together. She said, I hear you talk all the time about how bad things such as TikTok and, you know, a lot of the social media content is and what's happening with Planned Parenthood. But she said, all of a sudden it hit home, because here my son is, you know, letting on that things are rough for him as a high schooler in this culture and with everything with pornography. And, you know, I heard him saying this girl was acting disgusting, and I tried to kind of correct it, encourage him to be charitable, but then here I am, and I get what he's saying, but how do these kids come out unscathed? And I think it's true, Hugh, because Planned Parenthood has encouraged this lifestyle. You have Cosmo magazine, you have Glamour with just yesterday Megan Fox coming out with her news interview talking about creepy things such as drinking her fiance Machine Gun Kelly's blood. We covered that on the podcast yesterday. But Hugh, it's one of those moments where if we're not having the conversations, the rest of the world will. And I know you're a parent. How do you bridge some of these tough topics with your own kids, especially being so in the know, working to expose the pro-abortion movement and build up a culture of life?
So that is a fantastic question. So my wife and I have five children. I met my wife when we were 14 years old on the very first day of public high school. And I tell people the only good thing to come out of public high school for me back in the 80s was the fact that I met my wife. But that inspired me. My wife and I also are founders of a Catholic high school. It's in its 16th year. And so I have talked to the kids there, and I actually coach the football team there. I'm in my fourth year. And a lot of the young men on that team are not Catholic. They're Christian, or they come from Catholic families that maybe are not practicing. And so I get to have these conversations with a very diverse group of young people. Mm-hmm. And my answer to your question is you can have no fear. There's a reason we named our Catholic high school St. Michael the Archangel. And we had that idea back in the 90s, 15 years before it opened, because that was the culture then. The battle for their souls is very real. And the examples that they have are horrible. And you have to be able to discuss the fact that morality is not hateful, that virtue is not something to be reviled, that, you know, goodness and the heart of goodness and truth emanate from one source and one source only. And there's no such thing as my truth and subjectivity. And having these conversations with kids has to have real examples. So we talk, you know, I talk, you name it, we talk about it. We talk about pornography. We talk about vaping. We talk about having dignity with young women, you know, why the hookup culture is upside down and how it hurts you more than just as much as it hurts somebody else. And you have to be willing to have these conversations that, you know, as a father might have made my blood curdled, you know, 15 years ago, but you have to be willing to do it because, you know, I had a friend give me the example, you know, like cell phones. We have five children. Our three oldest kids didn't have cell phones till they graduated from high school. My two younger ones now, one is graduating, one is about to next year. They've had cell phones for the last year, but at my house at 9 p.m. every night, those phones are mine. And they get turned off. You know, would you put your child to sleep at night with a rattlesnake in the corner of their bedroom? No, you wouldn't. And the cell phone, you know, the cell phone is no better. And from just the conversations with kids that you may not want going on to the access to the world through the internet, you have to do little things in your home. I listened to your intro and it talked about the difficulty of men praying. That is a problem. And men have to be men. Men have to lead their families. You have to lead your family in the rosary. I would, to any man that's struggling with that, I would say at least on Sundays, you know, take 15 minutes and say the rosary with your family and ask for the grace of God to be in your home and around your children. Men have got to lead their families. Christ is the head of us. We are the head of our families. And that's not misogynist. It's not all the other nonsense that the world vomits on us. We have to be willing to push back on that. And I tell people this, when they start calling me hater and this, that, and the other, that means I'm doing the right thing, right? Mm-hmm. When they start throwing all those stones, that so be it. That means that we're serving the Lord because we just came through the Lenten season and they did a lot worse to him. So whatever we have to persevere, so be it. But we've got to bear that witness because I don't see it in a lot of places. So that's what I tell people. Yeah. If not us, who? You know, so
you're reminding me of a story, Hugh, because what your testimony is so profound, so important. We have to be willing to get uncomfortable, to have no fear in these conversations. And it's not just with teenagers. It's among our peers. I remember about 5 years after I had graduated college, I was with a friend of mine. We both went to a small Catholic university, John Paul Great Catholic University in San Diego. And we're talking in the topic of same-sex attraction, same-sex marriage comes up. And she's kind of, you know, fallen away from the church. And she kept looking at me and she's saying, well, love is love. Like, who are we to say something otherwise? And I had a firm and clear and yes, you know, charitable response. I just kept coming back to it. But the problem was she just couldn't wrap her head around the idea of saying no to someone. That even just saying no was hurtful. And she kept coming back to that phrase, love, endless love. And we have to be willing, yes, to have no fear, but to accept sometimes we're planting seeds that may not bear any fruit for years to come or might just happen to provide another perspective that this person might not otherwise ever hear. And that's part of our responsibility to bear the good news of the gospel, to share truth in light of a radical culture of death, such as Planned Parenthood and everything that we're facing. Hugh, I love what you are all doing at American Life League. You are an incredible resource of information and education to stay active in the pro-life movement. So I highly recommend checking out American Life League. That's ALL.org. Again, that's ALL.org. It's a great place to go for tons of resources in the pro-life movement. If you want to learn more about being pro-life, go to ALL.org. Check them out now. We'll include a link again on social media. Thank you so much for joining us, Hugh. You're with us during our weekly Gentleman's Hour today on Trending. And we're diving into a fascinating topic having to do with men in prayer. I've had some interesting conversations recently with my husband and some other men about why is it so hard for men to pray? Well, why don't a lot of men pray? Good, faithful men. Well, we're going to grapple with that, but I'd love to hear your thoughts, gentlemen. The number's 1-888-914-9149, or you can go and share your thoughts now on my Instagram story. I put a question box up there. Follow me at Timmerie, T-I-M-M-E-R-I-E. I also want to get your thoughts on the whole Megan Fox cover story from yesterday. If you haven't already caught that podcast, it's available now wherever you catch your podcasts, relevantradio.com, or again, wherever you catch those. I'll be right back here on Trending, diving into that topic of what's happening with prayer, why do men struggle to pray, and why is it that only one out of five 20-year-olds go to church today, maybe once or twice a month. We'll be right back.
So, what's trending?
Bridging your Catholic faith with your everyday life. You're listening to Trending with Timory on Relevant Radio and the Relevant Radio app.
Okay, gentlemen, I want to hear from you. The topic of the hour is this. It's a gentleman's hour. Why do men struggle with prayer? And why don't you pray? You can give me a call. I'd love to hear from you. 1-888-914-9149. Or if it's easier for you, you can comment and share your thoughts now on my Instagram. I post an Instagram story up there. Or you can DM me. Follow me at Timmery. That's T-I-M-M-E-R-I-E. I would love to hear from you on this topic, because I think there are a lot of perspectives, from everything from people saying that prayer seems feminine to everything from distraction or lack of role models or other people wanting to pray. All of these, I think, are relevant issues that men bring up when it comes to the problem of prayer. But let's have a real conversation about this. I want to hear from you. Again, leave your comments at Timmery, T-I-M-M-E-R-I-E, on Instagram. I put it in my Instagram story. And related to this topic, we'll bridge into it. A study came out, a recent survey by Deseret News and Marist poll, showing that among 18 to 29-year-olds, so basically 20-year-olds, among 20-year-olds, those young adults, only 1 out of 5 of them are going to church, and maybe once or twice per month. Now, some have commented that they're surprised that even 1 out of 5 go to church. And, you know, sometimes I think people like the idea of going to church. So, yeah, you know, I try, and then you realize, man, it's been a couple of months since I've gone to church. And next thing you know, you're just not going. I can even think of a friend of mine. You know, she came to visit me, fallen away Catholic. And I remember saying, okay, you know, we're headed to church. What time do you want to go? And we're driving on our way to church. And she said, I don't remember last time I went to church. And it was kind of one of those moments where she realized, it kind of just hit her in the face. I don't remember when I stopped going to church. And I guess I hadn't realized how long it had been. It's really interesting, because to see such low church attendance numbers among those in their 20s today, it speaks volumes to the culture of despair that many young people experience. My generation, the millennial generation, and Gen Z right behind us have a propensity to despair, to hopelessness. Why? Because when you don't have God, when you don't have faith, when you don't have hope in someone, something beyond yourself, and that is specifically, namely, God himself, our creator, and he who we're meant to be with, both now and eternity, well, we can lose sight of the whole purpose in life. We can lose sight of the value of our very creation. We see this culture among millennials and Gen Z of a travel bug, this desire to travel and experience various cultures. But with that is also this desire, in that pursuit of international cultures, they're looking for, well, what does this culture practice spiritually? And they're fascinated. They're riveted by tradition. They're riveted by the rawness of living from the earth and being outside more. What they're ultimately riveted by is God, by nature, by the created world. And they're missing the fact that they are part of that created world, and they themselves have a nature, a human nature, and a divine calling. They're searching for happiness, meaning, and purpose, but they're doing it in all the wrong places. It's interesting looking at this poll, the survey that came out of Deseret News and the Marist poll. At one point in the article from Deseret News, it says, and for all that generations talk about being spiritual, these young adults aren't even inclined to pray. And it's true. The millennials and Gen Z talk all the time about how they're spiritual, not religious, and they're all into Buddhism and Hinduism, but they don't pray. Another study came out that not even 1 in 4 say that they pray daily. That's actually a stark contrast to those who are 60 and older today. 7 out of 10 60-year-olds on up pray, but less than 1 in 4 of those in their 20s today pray. It's interesting, because I don't think it's just people who aren't going to church who don't pray. This will tie into our topic about how many men struggle with prayer. And I want to hear your thoughts, gentlemen. It's gentlemen's hour today. And I want to hear why you struggle with prayer, why you think that prayer is so difficult for men, or not interesting, or maybe ineffective. But when we come to that, I think there's an important tie-in, because I remember probably about 8 or 9 years ago, I was involved in helping organize a research focus group. And we were collecting data about trends and practices among faithful Catholics. You know, Catholics who went to Mass at least on Sundays, you know, lived by a Catholic ethic, you know, subscribed to vast majority, if not all, of the church's teaching, you know, even went to confession. And in this group that was polled, a very Catholic group, I was fascinated as I was helping collect the data results and plugging them in, because I did know many of the people who were there. And grant, the whole survey was anonymous, but knowing the majority of people who were there, it was interesting to read a lot of the responses to the questions. And most of the questions revealed that most of those who were polled, who were even very Catholic, did not pray on a daily basis. Not only did they not pray on a daily basis, but they just forget to. They struggled to. They didn't always find the benefit or the effectiveness of it. And it spoke volumes to me, because I think that it was a sign of the times of how distracted we are, how obsessed we are with productivity for the sake of productivity, which I think is so anti-human. We're human beings, not human doings. And one of the great things about prayer is it's a moment to be present to God and God to you. And that could mean that you're being present to God in an activity that you're working on, but it's being more present in your body, more present in the gift of your body, in the gift of your life, and everything that surrounds you. And so this brings me to another thought, because as I'm looking at this, I guess one of the big questions, I think many parents, future parents, or anyone who wants to have kids, you might be asking, well, what would make a child more likely to keep their religion as they grow up? Because the studies are showing that these 20-year-olds who only 1 in 5 maybe go to church once or twice per month, they quit their religion before they became 18. It was years before. But the question then is, well, what can help a child today maintain their faith through high school and beyond in owning it in their adult life? Well, what's fascinating is there are a few things that this study shows and that continue to reign true. The reality is that children who have a close relationship with a father who practices his faith are far, far more likely to practice their faith than not. This is a reminder that dads, your faith matters when it comes to your kids. The example you set from, yes, going to church, making church a priority, leading your family and encouraging your family in saying grace before meals, and teaching them how to pray their morning prayers and night prayers. And my husband will put our baby girl to bed most nights in the evening. And one of our big things is making sure she has an opportunity to pray. As simple as it is, she's 16 months old. You know, going up to the crucifix, and we've done this for months, just standing there before the crucifix and, you know, helping to teach her to have a prayer life, to say, thank you, Jesus. Say, I love you, Jesus. You say, take care of my family, Jesus. You know, starting simple and building that up. To have a father do that with their children, the reality is that a study came out some years ago, I think back in 2019, it was research out of Harvard. And what this research showed is that the practice of praying during childhood and learning how to pray from your parents led to adults who made healthier life choices, were better physically, mentally, and emotionally as adults, as young adults today. So those who are thriving the most as young adults today, research from Harvard said, are those who have a prayer life, who not only have religion, who don't only have the practice of going to church, but who have the practice of turning to God in their woes and in their joys, in gratitude and in petition. And so I think that these are some really important facts. Number one, a child is more likely to have their faith when they have a close relationship with their father who practices faith. Children are more likely to keep their faith with parents who have faith and stay married. When parents split up who have faith, the reality is that children are less likely to practice their faith later on, even more less likely, because it's very common after a split up that at least one of the parents stops practicing and modeling that faith, and it often ends up being the father. And again, coming back to that Harvard research that we've talked about for years here on Trending, the practice of prayer during childhood, equipping your children to know how to pray, will make them happier, healthier, physically better, mentally better, and emotionally well off. Not just giving your children faith, but the practices of that day-to-day faith make a world of difference. What examples have parents set? I think that this is a question that we have to ask as we're talking about only 1 in 5 20-year-olds going to church maybe once or twice a month. I think that this is a cultural crisis that we're seeing, and I really do want to point to some things that are happening. One, we know that prayer is important, and families coming together to pray throughout their week and throughout their day. Moments of this are so important, whether it's morning prayer, night prayer, before meals, maybe it's even a rosary here or there during the week, in the car, maybe it's nightly. But if prayer together as a family is important, even if it's as simple as, you know, doing that prayer together before a meal in public or in private homes, making sure you're doing it in both. But second, having family meals together. I think that parents setting the example that not only is our faith important, but so is our family, that we're putting the two and two together, that practicing your faith means practicing love and charity and sacrifice within the home and within the context of the most important relationships you have. But also, I want to encourage a little convicting moment that I think is very hard in the 21st century. And that is, what example are parents setting when it comes to extracurricular activities? We live in an age where, when I was a kid, you didn't really have many sports programs on Sundays. But today, it seems as if whole weekends, all day Sunday, are peppered with league tournaments and games, making it difficult to show or even attend Mass, or to show that Mass is a priority. Instead of everything surrounding Mass on Sundays, Mass is the thing that's squeezed in to somehow fit into our social or extracurricular activities. You have to take back that time for your kid to set that example. The church is the most important thing that you can do on Sunday, and it's what forms and shapes the entire week. I think it's something to think about as we come into this 21st century of 1 in 5 young adults maybe going to church a couple times a week. Think about this. If you're not married, think about who you marry. Is faith important for you to see your children have? Because who you marry will impact whether or not your children have faith. We have to remember, as married couples, the hypocrisy that our marriages can show. And there are always excuses, but that dear friend I mentioned earlier who went to a great Catholic school and then left the faith, part of what made her struggle was the hypocrisy of seeing her parents' messy marriage and thinking that they were great Catholics for all these years, and to find out, wow, you're not that great. Hypocrisy, that witness, it speaks volumes, and it sometimes leads to whether or not people want to practice their faith as adults. And these, I think, are very important things that we have to consider when it comes to the choices and examples for not just ourselves, but the next generation, and whether or not they'll have faith at all. You're listening to Trending with Tim Ray here on Relevant Radio. An interesting question came in, or comment, from Luis on Instagram. He sent me a message talking about how a few weeks ago I covered a topic during our weekly Gentleman's Hour asking gentlemen, what are you afraid of? Are you afraid of failure in life? What are you afraid of? And he said, Timmy, I'm afraid of failure in life. I'm afraid of not being accomplished. And I thought this was an interesting response. I think a lot of men are afraid of failure. They're afraid of not achieving. And it's not just a matter of accolade among others, but it's a matter of accomplishing something in life or meeting their responsibilities that they have to meet for others who are dependent upon them. And my response to this was twofold. One, all of us, but especially men, need to pray for the virtue of courage. Courage is the virtue to act in the face of fear. It doesn't mean that the fear is gone, but that we still act, that we don't allow ourselves to be stymied by fear, to turn in on ourselves. Instead, we still move forward making good choices. And even to pray for that virtue of fortitude, which goes beyond courage, but it's to act in the face of fear, even to the point of death. I think we live in a culture that is calling us to truly die to ourselves so radically, to get a little egg on our face among our peers who radically disagree with us on some of the most striking and sometimes simple cultural topics, but as people of faith, we have to draw a line on. And so my response again was pray for this virtue of courage and fortitude, but second, develop a prayer life that will give you direction and that will help you to develop that virtue. But this brings me to the topic of the hour, and I am excited to hear your thoughts. The topic of the hour is this: why do men struggle with prayer? And gentlemen, tell me, why don't you pray? You can call and share your thoughts now. It's 1-888-914-9149. Or you can also comment with your thought on my Instagram at Timmerie. That's T-I-M-M-E-R-I-E. The question's up on Twitter and Facebook as well, if that is where you are at with social media. Would love to hear from you. We have Richard from Hacienda Heights, California, who has a thought about prayer. Richard, welcome to Trending. Why is it so hard for men to pray? And why, perhaps, have you gone through phases in your life where you haven't prayed?
So, hi, Timmy. Thanks for taking my call. So, my thought is, I've always been a Catholic, but I completed, you know, my sacraments a year ago. And I think you touched on it, just it's practicing it. You just got to practice, right? When you practice something, you get better. So, I struggle with actually, like, being in the prayer, like, actually saying it. Like, I think you mentioned being in the car. I would put on, you know, prayers from my phone just so I can hear it. And even though I may not follow along fully with it, it creates, like, muscle memory. Like, I start to remember the prayer. And like, I think you hit on it. It's just practice. You keep practicing, you get better, and then you get a routine, and whenever you don't do it, you know, you're like, oh, I need to pray because I didn't do it, you know, a certain time or a certain way. So that's just my thought.
Mm-hmm. Creating that quiet time, making this space, it's so easy to become distracted. And like you said, to hear it, kind of to have that repetition, to start memorizing those prayers. It's interesting to hear how simple it is. Like, you just need to hear it done. You need to make the time. And isn't that anything in our life? If we really care about it, we're going to prioritize to learn how to do it, start practicing it, and again, make time for it. You're listening to Trending with Timmerie here on Relevant Radio. We're taking your questions and comments on why do men struggle with prayer and why don't you pray. We're going to come back on this, diving deeper into the topic with some of your keen thoughts and insights. We'll be right back here on Trending with Timmerie during our weekly Marriage Hour.
We're talking about what you're thinking about. You're listening to Trending with Timmerie on Relevant Radio and the Relevant Radio app.
It's our weekly Gentleman's Hour today on Trending. The topic of the hour is, why do men struggle with prayer? Gentlemen, I'd like to hear from you. Why don't you pray? Number's 1-888-914-9149. I think that it's interesting to hear many of the responses that have come in. This was triggered by a conversation I had with my husband. You can share your thoughts on my Instagram story. Follow me at Timmerie. That's T-I-M-M-E-R-I-E. You can share your thoughts now. My husband and I were talking about struggling with prayer and how, you know, we've seen and we discussed how prayer has been a lot harder of a practice for him than it has been for me, and how just in general, it's something that men tend to struggle with more often. I've been talking to a few men over the last couple of days about this, and it's interesting because there have been a lot of varying responses from some saying men don't want to pray because it's feminine. And I think that it's interesting to hear that because I know there's a massive complaint that the church has been very feminized and the way the faith is presented very differently from the way it was even 100 years ago. And you know, even joke I shared last week during our gentleman's hour, my husband was so frustrated. He went to a men's conference a month ago, and while he was there, the main speaker had these dudes holding hands, looking at each other, saying, "You're beloved, you are cherished." And I wouldn't even feel comfortable doing that at a women's conference. These men had to have been dying inside. So I get that complaint that the church can feel feminine, or maybe the way prayer has been presented seems feminine, but I have to disagree. If you're experiencing that, I think that sometimes it's due to role models or how prayer has been presented to you. But I think time and time again of Jesus Christ all throughout the Gospels, Jesus Christ, who is a man incarnate, male body, right? He would often go time and time again alone to a quiet place and sometimes with his apostles to pray. Over and over again, I can't understand what is feminine about that. He's there to talk to God, his Father. Since when is having a relationship with your father feminine? I think of Jacob, who wrestles through the night with an angel, and it's often been used as a symbol of prayer. We'll have to unpack that story maybe next week here on Trendy. And reading that scripture and looking to some of the patriarchs and hearing that story, all night long he wrestled with this angel. It's a symbol of how difficult prayer is. And you can either give in and not engage, or you can engage and work through the night. And maybe it is like staying up all night trying to swat someone off of your back. That's how hard prayer can be at times. And I don't know what is feminine about that. And I even think of the Psalms and King David. If anyone wants to say that the Psalms are feminine, clearly you haven't read more than two Psalms ever, or even a full Psalm. The Psalms are written by a warrior king, King David. It's fascinating because people expected that Jesus Christ, being the son of David, the descendant of David, would be another warrior king. He wasn't a warrior king the way they expected. But here David is, this proto, this example, this foreshadowing of Jesus Christ, and he's so masculine. If you're missing the masculine dimension of prayer, these are some examples that I think are extremely helpful. We'll unpack this a little bit more, but I want to hear, a lot of you are calling in, Samuel from Minneapolis. Why do men struggle with prayer? Shoot. Welcome to Trending. Sam, I'd love to hear your thoughts.
Hello, can you hear me?
Yes.
Yeah, so I was, you know, just kind of thinking, men are so goal-oriented and such a mechanical mind and rational thinking, whereas women are more disposed to relationships. And that's exactly what prayer is. Prayer is just relationship and talking with God. So because there really isn't something to be solved, there really isn't a goal to be completed within prayer, men might not be disposed to that.
I think that's interesting to see the difference of being goal-oriented and rational versus relational. You know, I think that that is part of the reason why it is easier for women. Women perhaps have a greater tendency toward gratitude as well. And so sometimes it's easier for women to be grateful to God and to have that relational element. And men, you know, it's get the task done, okay, great, and move on. You guys have a greater capacity for strength and a different type of self-preservation than women have. And so it's easy for that to be missed. Michael is calling from Elmhurst, Illinois, and he has an interesting comment about prayer that I think connects even to what Sam was just saying. Michael, welcome to Trending. What are your thoughts on prayer and why men struggle with it?
Thank you. I think it's a matter of, again, this is not how it should be, but we put it as a lower priority because we think of it as an additional commitment or area of responsibility on top of everything, all the other responsibilities and commitments that we have. And we tend to, I think, dispense with the prayer, you know, as one of the first things that are, you know, cut off. And in addition, that with that feeling of, okay, you know, like you said, you know, before earlier about talking about doing it as a routine and a practice and a consistent practice, if we fall off that consistency, then there's that guilt and despair of, you know, rather than getting back on the horse again, so to speak, that we feel like, okay, you know what, I didn't do it at my morning prayers. I've missed a couple of days in a row. Now I'm just, you know, just let it go. So once you've stepped away from it, it's, whereas maybe, you know, again, I don't know if this is all, you know, a generalization or not, but I think maybe it's easier for a woman to get back on, you know, to do it. Oh, I got to get to it. And then she does it, as opposed to guys, okay, I got to do this and this and this and this, and it's not on the list and I let it go anyway. So just let it go, period.
It's easy if you're busy. I think that that's a very profound comment, Michael, because prayer does seem to become a lowest priority. And like you said, when men have a lot of responsibilities and commitments, you put it as your lowest priority. It's not the thing that's most demanding right in front of you. And I can even think, you know, as my husband and I, this was triggered by a conversation between the two of us. And we're talking about how, you know, it's hard for men to pray. It's harder for men to pray. And I've even felt bad in the evenings. Maybe, you know, things get really busy and perhaps I need more help. I'm asking for more things from him. And lo and behold, by the time we go to bed, he's exhausted. And sometimes I'll just ask, did you pray? And it was like, man, I'm exhausted at this point. And it's easy for me to be like, oh man, maybe I asked too much. But it's also easy to say, where do we place our priorities in light of all of our responsibilities? And this brings me to part of the conversation I had with my husband, because I thought it was fascinating. We're talking about how for men, sometimes having that understanding of what St. Benedict's motto, his saying for the Benedictines and for some of his work, is ora et labora. This idea that prayer at work and work at prayer, that we combine and fuse the two together. You know, sometimes, yes, we are called to sit alone in a room and pray. We are called to sit before our Lord Jesus Christ in prayer, in adoration, before the tabernacle, in the Mass. But it's also effective to pray through your activities. And for some, it's also better, you know, to carve. My husband was even saying this, you know, maybe it's, you know, while you're carving wood in silence and it's your hobby that you might have that you do a couple times a week. It might be perhaps if you're fixing a car and you're working with your hands. I was talking to my producer, John. He was talking about, you know, taking Christ into an activity with you when you pray, and looking at, you know, the wisdom of St. Jose Maria Escrivá and how you enter into things with Christ. You're taking him with you. And perhaps this is why prayer was something that we speak of was a model seen in St. Joseph. We're getting ready to celebrate his feast day of St. Joseph the Worker. He was a model for workmen. And I truly believe that part of that was because his work was a prayer. And it was combined. You know, there was this balance of ora et labora, the saying that we hear from St. Benedict. And, you know, this also comes back to this struggle that many people have, not just men, women too, of understanding that Christ, Jesus Christ himself, called us to not just pray, but to combine our prayer with fasting. And he never once ever said just during Lent or just on Fridays that we implement prayer and fasting with one another. He says some demons are only cast out with prayer and fasting. And sometimes that is what helps us to battle our own demons, pulling us away from prayer, pulling us away from making those sacrifices. And two, proper posture when we're, you know, kneeling before our bed, before the crucifix. Do we have those icons in our home to help orient us toward prayer? Because it's not comfortable to get down and kneel and pray. I can't remember which saint it was. I want to say it was St. John the Apostle. He was known as, they called him Camel Knees, because his knees were so just like calloused and transformed from all the time he would do kneeling in prayer. Jose from Sacramento is calling to share his thoughts on why prayer is so difficult. Quick thought from you, Jose. Okay, so Jose is gone. He said, one, the issue that many people have with prayer is lack of knowledge, not knowing how to pray, and also having someone to pray with. That's actually something I've heard from a lot of people, especially on social media, that sometimes there just hasn't been someone else to pray with them, or who's ever taught them how to pray. And I can actually speak volumes to this in my relationship with my husband. You know, his prayer life has grown in part since we've been married. I think that's part of the responsibility of marriage and having children. But it was also a matter of having someone else praying with him, of learning other ways to pray that perhaps he was never exposed to. There was a deeper level of appreciation. And I think that another thought, we can't get to everyone. There's so many calls and comments on social media. Tom from San Luis Obispo in California said, I pray the rosary when I ride my bike, and that they should publish missals that people can read before they go to Mass. Yes, read your missal before you go to Mass, read the prayers, but praying while you ride the bike, you're praying your rosary while walking. I think I have some of my most meditative time praying the rosary while walking. There's nothing wrong with movement in prayer. There's nothing wrong with taking your prayer into activity. I think that sometimes that's why men can struggle. The lack of experience, the lack of know-how, the lack of priority, but taking that prayer into your activity and letting it transform the activities you're entering into. If you have any more thoughts on prayer, I'd love to hear from you. Go ahead and reach out on social media. Follow me at relevantradio.com/trending. Have you joined us for a weekly marriage hour? Well, this one is going to be hot. This is Tim Ray from Trending with Tim Ray, and we are going to talk about meeting men's needs, what that number one need is for men, and it's not what you think. We're also going to talk about meeting women's needs as well and the number one need that women have. So join me Thursday for our weekly Candid Marriage Hour, 6 p.m. Central on Relevant Radio or the Relevant Radio app.